How many films have changed the perception of an entire country? Not many. But one of them is certainly The Harder They Come. This film and its soundtrack put Jamaica on the map when it was released 40 years ago. I'm Chris Salovich. In this program, I'll be telling the story of the film and its music, speaking to its stars and asking why the rebel is such a common archetype in Jamaican culture. I went to Kingston to find out. Well, I'm standing off Marcus Garvey Drive on the edge of Trenchtown in what essentially seems to be an industrial trading estate. It's rather drab, anonymous buildings. However, the splurge of red, gold and green lets me know that this is Tuff Gong Studios, Bob Marley's operation, of course, and formerly Federal Studio. This is where Jimmy Cliff, under the eyes of the strict studio boss Hilton, records The Harder They Come, the song that really, perhaps more than any other, spread reggae music out into the world. Will they tell me off a pie
up in the sky? 40 years ago, a film opened in British cinemas that changed our perception of Jamaica forever. The Harder They Come was the first movie produced in Jamaica by Jamaicans. It was our first glimpse of the sun-soaked, seductive cool of funky Kingston in the 1970s. A rite of passage story about an aspiring musician trying to make it in the cutthroat record industry. It was also an introduction to a distinctly Jamaican archetype, the rude boy.
What is a rude boy? Somebody who you believe is doing wrong, but you can't help but be captivated by them because of their style and their attitude. We do have the culture of rooting for the rude boy. And I keep on fighting
for the things I want. I've never seen no film before Harder They Come or after Harder They Come that represents Jamaica in terms of what we would say a rude boy.
I always said that Harder They Come was an antisocial film. As brilliant and as great as it is, it was a bit irresponsible.
When I first saw The Harder They Come, I was excited and a bit confused. I didn't understand all the dialogue, which was mostly in heavy Jamaican patois. But the imagery and the story had me hooked. I remember the richness and the colour, the ganja and the guns. For a music journalist in grey London in the early 1970s, it was a window onto a world I'd never encountered before. I wanted to get straight onto a plane and go there, and I did. Since then, I've lived in and written extensively about Jamaica and its music. 40 years on, The Harder They Come is widely acknowledged as a cult classic, but the movie also has a more subtle and less savoury legacy. It set a template for a corrupt music industry where the country's most successful artists have close associations with violence and gun crime. In this series, I'll explore the influence of the film and its soundtrack and ask why does the rebel or rude boy have such an enduring appeal? Dancehall singer Ninja Man has sold millions of records and is currently out on bail for murder.
The harder they come, the harder they fall. My song, that. I'm going to forget my share now, what's mine. Me not run for nothing. Me want what is mine, and what is mine. So if you are a track and field, if you are a footballer, if you are a basketballer and netballer, I'm going to get my share now. And the harder they come, the harder they fall.
The Harder They Come opens with Ivan O. Martin, played by Jimmy Cliff, arriving in Kingston in search of a job and a future.
Hey, country boy, come on, hurry, man. More up.
You have money. If you have money, go anywhere, you know.
The movie was written and directed by Perry Hensel, a white Jamaican who grew up on a large sugar farm just outside Kingston. He was sent to Stowe Public School in England and spent a brief stint in the BBC's drama department. Returning to Jamaica, he directed commercials before turning his hand to serious filmmaking, as he explained shortly before he died in 2006.
I was obsessed with realism. I felt that the realists in film, Ken Loach, John Cassavetes, were like communists or socialists or, you know, very serious. And I felt that I could be as realistic as they were, but with a smile.
Back in the late 1960s, the popular image of Jamaica came from tourist brochures. It was white sand, palm trees, blue sea, smart hotels. Some films were made in Jamaica, the first James Bond movie, Dr. No. But there was no actual local film industry to speak of at all, which Perry Henzel was determined to challenge. Having decided to make the film, Perry Henzel set about writing the script. His daughter, Justine.
The script that they started with was not the film that they ended up with at all. You know, the original script, the character of Ivan, was not a singer. It's only when they cast Jimmy Cliff that Ivan became a singer.
When Perry was casting the film, Jimmy Cliff was a rising reggae star who'd just released his second album, Wonderful World, Beautiful People. Here's Jimmy.
On that album jacket, he said he saw a range of photography. On the front of the jacket, he said, I look like a very confident person. And on the back of the jacket, he said, I look like a real loser.
A vulnerability as well as a strength, obviously.
Exactly, that's right.
The inspiration for the lead character of Ivan O'Martin came from a real-life criminal. Nicknamed Rygin, a patois word which means vigorous and passionate, but also bad or aggressive, he was a folk hero of the late 1940s. Like Cliff's character, he also came from the countryside and moved to Kingston. For research, Perry Henzel used eyewitness testimony and the widespread press coverage of Rygin's criminal activities.
Police hunt desperado after running gun battle in city's West End. Bullets from the revolver of an escaped convict took two lives and caused injury to four
Rygin.
Other persons. 5 feet 3 inches high, he walks quickly and speaks fluently. And since he began his criminal career, he has never been known to be at any time without a revolver. A neat dresser, he sometimes wears heels to make him appear taller. Ivanhoe Martin, the man with the itch on his trigger finger, a penchant for fast shooting and an inordinate love for sensational display.
Yeah, it was a name that struck terror.
Jimmy Cliff.
At that time, like, I was a schoolboy in short pants, and when we heard about Rygin, it's like for someone to have a gun in Jamaica at that time was like a huge, big thing. But let alone to have a gun, but to have killed a policeman. So Rygin was like one terrible person.
He was in the folklore. I mean, I heard of him as a child.
Cecil Gutsmore is a social scientist and historian.
I knew as a child that Rygin had a slogan that said Rygin was here, but he just disappeared. This notion that he couldn't be caught by the authorities, and indeed he wasn't for years.
Eventually, Rygin was caught, but he escaped from prison until he was finally hunted down and killed by the police in a gunfight. Part of the Harder They Come's irresistible appeal comes from watching Ivan's tragic descent from wide-eyed idealist to hardened criminal.
Many rivers to cross.
Inside of the film, we see Ivan seeking employment. At one moment, he goes down to what we used to call the dungle, where people eke out a living off the rubbish heap. But he goes to an uptown house to offer to be a gardener, to wash car, and indeed to do anything. The kind of sexual offer is the way I read it.
How do you do?
What are you doing there?
I'm looking for work, Mom.
I don't have any work to give you.
The uptown lady who he has that encounter with. She doesn't recognize that Ivan is seeking employment because he goes through his requests for employment and then he ends up begging from her.
Begging your 10 cents and more.
What's the matter with you young, healthy boys? All you know to do is beg, beg, beg. That's all you can do, just beg?
Above all, it's Ivan's ambition to make it as a singing star. He goes to a studio and he cuts a record.
What's the meaning of this, sir?
I mean, you get $20 for the record.
$20, sir? That don't sound right.
How much do you think it's worth, then?
Well, I think that'd be about $200, you know, sir.
Although his record goes on to become a success, Ivan is swindled by the studio boss. And it's this disappointment that eventually pushes him towards crime. For many people, me included, it wasn't the film, but the music they encountered first. There was something in the soundtrack album which captured a sense of frustration and indeed resistance of the time.
As much as the soundtrack is really sort of capturing the experiences of the characters in the film, it's at the same time defining where the country was at that period.
Dr. Matthew Smith is a lecturer in history from the University of the West Indies in Kingston.
A decade after independence, there was this increasing frustration. People were feeling that the state had not provided what they expected. The music scene really is powerful in that regard because you see people who have had that experience of an Ivan come from outside of Kingston, settle in Kingston, and now they're maturing and now they're developing and now they understand what is happening in the country better than anyone else.
There's a big change coming, and I think some of that energy you can certainly pick up in the film.
Matthew Parker, author of The Sugar Barons.
There was a slight crisis of identity in Jamaica around independence. The 50s had been an enormously optimistic time with growing tourism, with bauxite coming on tap, and with, for the first time, black faces appearing in positions of authority. The 60s were a disappointment. And a lot of the promise of independence wasn't met. And Norman Manley, who was, in my view, the real father of Jamaican independence, put this down to the lack of confidence, which he saw as a legacy of slavery, and he would complain, "We are still a colonial people. The values of a plantation still prevail."
The Harder They Come was shot on location around Kingston, and I went for a drive around the city with Carl Bradshaw, a former Olympic athlete who plays the character of Jose, a petty criminal and informant who lures Ivan into drug dealing and then double-crosses him.
So they all call you Jose as they drive along? A character in the film.
Character, because in How Did They Come is Jose, as you know.
We're there, are we in the place?
We're there.
Yeah.
This is where the chase sequence was shot, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of the chase scene was shot down this gully.
This is the gully with a street running around the side of it, bending, curving, visually very attractive. Yeah. Zinc sheeting on the side of the buildings here.
Which way I got you?
At this point in the film, Ivan is out for revenge. And he tracks Jose to Kingston's Standpipe ghetto area, where a chase commences. Yes. The scene was shot by cameraman Chappie Zanjoust in a gully, a kind of deep artificial drainage river common in Kingston.
We found a location only to discover that there's only one gun. So I then had to think very quickly. There had to be a point when the two of them were going to be in the shot. So I decided that Carl would jump over the fence and the camera would be on his feet as he comes towards the camera. And as he passes the camera, he hands the gun over my head to Jimmy. Well, the first shot, Carl came down and instead of handing the gun to Jimmy, he flung it and his aim was not right. So it hit me right in my jaw. So then so blood all over the place.
The film star, Jimmy Cliff.
You know, that scene was one of the scenes that came later on because we felt that my character had not been like a winner as yet. So we went back and filmed that scene.
This is Kingston's General Penitentiary, downtown, just off the waterfront. It's here that Ivan O'Martin is brought after his first run-in with the law, following his arrest for a violent assault. As his punishment, he's taken into the prison yard and gets 8 blows from the tamarind switch.
It's a key sequence in the film because later, when chased by a policeman, rather than endure a repeat of this, he shoots and kills the cop. This beating is the source of the anger that accelerates Ivan Martin's inevitable decline.
I think one of the things that viewers still find shocking today is the extreme levels of violence in The Harder They Come. But I think it's important to understand that Jamaica historically, ever since slavery was introduced in the 17th century, has been a place run on violence and terror.
Author Matthew Parker.
Remember that the white planters were outnumbered by their slaves, something like 8-1. And in order to keep control of them, they resorted to extreme violence, humiliation and degradation. And that legacy is, I think, in that film. Jamaica was particularly unique because, unlike the other smaller sugar islands, there was somewhere to run away to. If you're in Barbados, it's flat, it's all cane, there's nowhere to hide. But in Jamaica, you can go up into the mountains and you can join the bands of runaway slaves. So this made Jamaica almost impossible to control for the British. They never really controlled the whole country. But one thing to remember is that alongside the repression, there is always resistance. Right from the very early days, there were constant revolts, and that's really the Jamaican tradition of resistance that goes back all that way.
Forward and Payaka, Manakle and then Gosaka.
Ivan, having killed three policemen, is now well and truly on the run from the law. And the film is shortly to reach its bleak conclusion. The showdown will be at Lime Key, 7 miles from Kingston. In the film, Ivan's last stand is intercut with footage from the spaghetti western Django, which had been a huge hit at the Jamaican box office in 1966. This blurring of lines in Ivan's imagination between fiction and gritty reality is at the heart of the film's moral message. Historian Cecil Goodsmore.
Ivan comes to town with his head full of film lore. I came from a rural town in Jamaica, but there was a cinema there, and only because I couldn't afford it did I not go fairly regularly to the cinema. So people learned about the way in which bank robbers got celebrated, both in film and in reality, in the United States of America. In the imagination of the ordinary Jamaican, there's effectively no difference. That is why Ivan, at the end of the film, is imagining that one of those soldiers who are about to shoot him down, one of them is going to come out and do a duel with him, drawing pistols.
Send out one bad man!
The soldiers don't have pistols, they have light machine guns or automatic rifles. That's what they're about to use on him. But all of this is in his head.
And so, after 4 years of shooting, and 7 years after Perry Henzel started exploring the myth of Reigen, The Harder They Come was complete. The Jamaican premiere took place at 8 o'clock on June the 5th, 1972, at the Carib Theatre in the Crossroads area of downtown Kingston. Director Perry Henzel's wife, Sally, who was also the film's art director.
Opening night was just extraordinary. First of all, the entire Crossroads was just a sea of people and the brand new 15-foot chain link fence that's completely flattened. The Jamaicans were so crazy about seeing themselves on the screen. I mean, when the opening titles went up, there was a roar that went on till the film cut, you know? It was quite extraordinary. I could never talk about it for months after without bursting into tears. It was such an emotional experience.
There were over 2,500 people inside the 1,500 capacity cinema. Outside, though, there was a further 40,000 desperate to get in. Reggae DJ Tapazuki was one of them, and he used the situation to his advantage.
It was excited, man, because at that time I was a little rude boy, and I was involved in the excitement, and I made some money from the excitement.
How did you make this money, Tap?
People was fighting, pushing to go in, and a lot of pickpockets were there, and it was a catastrophe.
Perry Henzel may have won over the domestic audience, but the really hard job of recouping the film's budget was just beginning. He brought the film for a week of showings to the Classic Cinema in Brixton, London in 1973. Sitting here in limbo,
but I know it won't be long. We opened on, I think, probably a Tuesday night or something, and nobody in the theatre. Three or four people, five people in the theatre. The Jamaicans in England didn't want to be embarrassed. So they weren't going to come to the film. The night after that, the theatre was about maybe half full. By the night after that, it was ram full. And the night after that, unbeknownst to me, the film critic from The Observer, George Melly, who is the most prestigious film critic in England, came down to Brixton. And not only saw the film, but saw the film with a full Jamaican audience, shouting and screaming and things.
The review in The Observer was glowing. By far and away, the best film of the week was Jamaica's first film, The Harder They Come, wrote George Melly. But Perry still had a long way to go to achieve widespread distribution for his movie. Filmmaker and cousin of Henzel, Chris Brown.
Having made a film independently myself and trying to get it out there, I can really understand what Perry went through. But I have it a lot easier in my day and age than Perry had back in his day. I can make a quick time of my trailer. I can put it on a website. I can send it to people just over the mail. I mean, Perry had to actually pick up the film cans in rolls, get on a plane and go to countries. And he told me he had to go to cinema owners and beg them just to show it to them. And if they look at it and they say, oh, it's a black film, I don't have an audience. Then that's it, he's out the door, you know, he's on to the next one. It took him another 6 years to get it out there, get it so the public could see it. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know
that my faith will lead me on. In contrast to the aggressive themes of the film, the soundtrack featured a mix of accessible reggae with a popular sensibility, and was vital in marketing both the film and Jamaica to the wider world. You can get it if you really want. You can get the album only had one original recording made specifically for the film, the title track. The rest were songs released between 1967 and 1972 and assembled by Perry Henzel. Yet the Harder They Come LP has become a touchstone, not just of reggae, but of the whole of popular music. His daughter, Justine.
I find it really amusing because every time I hear it in a store on the high street in some city around the world, I stop and I acknowledge it. And I'll turn to my adult children, and they'll be like, yeah, so what, Mom? Yeah, it plays all the time. For the next generation of Jamaicans who are in their 20s, the fact that Bob Marley, Sean Paul, Shaggy and so on are played all the time, all over the world, and that Rasta iconography and Jamaican colors are branded all over the world is completely normal for them. So between The Harder They Come and Bob Marley's incredible albums that were released at the same time, those two things were a real 1-2 punch. They really brought Jamaican culture to the point where, yeah, Puma and Adidas and, you know, everybody else brands products with red, green and gold or the Jamaica flag colors. You can get it if you really want, but you must try, try and try, try and try. You succeed at last. Eventually, the film did make its money back. In the UK, The Harder They Come became a staple of late-night cinema. It ran for 5 years at a movie theatre in Boston, Massachusetts. And it was colossally successful in, for example, Nigeria. Although currency complexities meant the director could only be paid in a consignment of shoes. Perry Henzel's realist vision of post-independence Jamaica
had gone global. Here was a new image of Jamaica, guns and ganja, rather than sandy beaches and rum cocktails. So, was this a good or a bad thing?
It was a necessary thing. Perry was reflecting in the Harder They Come what was happening in a certain aspect of Jamaica at that time. Did it give an incorrect representation of Jamaica? Absolutely not. It did not. It gave an accurate and authentic view of Jamaica. And Perry was a complete patriot and nationalist. So he never thought he was doing anything that would harm Jamaica in any way.
Whether or not Perry Henzel meant to damage his country, four decades on, Jamaican music remains, some would say, obsessed with gun crime. And some artists don't just talk the talk, but have been deeply involved in criminal activities. Next week, I'll be exploring the Harder They Come's role in inspiring a whole generation of Jamaicans. I'll be asking why so many of dancehall's biggest stars are associated with violent crime, and why it does their reputation no harm at all. We'll be looking at reggae's journey from the million-selling Harder They Come soundtrack to today's Jamaican-influenced bass culture, with its admiration for the bad man, which began with Ivanhoe Martin.
Jamaica, The Harder They Come, was presented by Chris Salovich and produced by Simon Poole. It was a Something Else production for the BBC World Service. The BBC World